Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show for you today. My guest will be Elizabeth Henderson. And Elizabeth has been a pioneer in the organic farming world for over 30 years. And I'm going to tell you more about her when she comes on the show, but I'm just really thrilled to finally be getting her on to share with all of you what she's been up to. But first, I just want to share with you some of the things going on in and around the news and some things that we all can do to try to make the world a little bit better place. In the news, Nestle is being sued right now for over $1 million for having lead in their food, knowingly having lead in their food that they sold to the Indian government and not doing anything about it. This kind of thing we've seen throughout history have happening over and over again. When money is involved, big corporations so often go for profit over doing the right thing. And as individuals and as communities, we need to all stand together to stand up against these big corporations because it just should not be happening. And you can read more about that on my website, but it's really horrible, and there's petitions that you can sign. Also, you know, I go to the farmer's market on the weekends and actually also on Wednesday mornings with a farm, not a farm stand, but a table to share the message of slow food. And I am the chair of Slow Food North Shore here on Long Island. And slow food is about good, clean, and fair food. And one of the things that slow food stands behind is transparency in our food and labeling GMOs and growing food without GMOs. And it's just amazing to me if you walk around the farmer's market and you ask people about GMOs. I mean, even when I go to other stands who are selling at the farmer's market, and, you know, it's a bakery, baked items or whatever, and they say, is it organic? They say no, and I say, they say, but we use the finest ingredients. I said, are you GMO-free? And they're like, what's that? And it's just mind-boggling to me that this day and age, there's still so many people out there that do not know what genetically modified organisms are. So we need to change that. So everyone out there who does listen and does know, and that's probably most of my audience, please speak up about it. Share that knowledge that you have about genetically modified organisms and about what they're doing to our planet with everybody so that people know. There's petitions to sign. We need to really work together as a one voice to battle this bill that is coming up in Congress. You know, we call it the Dark Act, but they call it the Safe Labeling Act. The actual name of it is not the Dark Act, but it's like the Safe Handling Act, something like that. And it's really horrible. It's a bill that will allow corporations to voluntarily label if they want, and it will take precedent over any state mandates of mandatory labeling that gets passed. So we really need to stand together and not let that happen, and that's not going to be able to happen unless we make sure everybody knows what genetically modified organisms are. So please speak out. And, you know, I encourage people also when you go out to eat, you know, ask questions. Ask if any of the food that you're getting is locally sourced, if it's organic. Ask if you're going to get fish, ask if it's wild. Tell them you don't want farm-raised fish. If you're going to get meat, ask if it's sustainably raised. Is it raised without hormones and antibiotics? The more we as a public speak up and ask questions, the more we raise awareness for people to make change. And it has to happen organically. It has to happen as a unit, as a community, all together. And it's not going to happen any other way. So I really beg all of you to take an active role. We all go out to eat. There's so few good restaurants out there, although they're getting better. But the more that we request good quality food at restaurants, the more they will hear our call and put pressure on suppliers to supply them with good quality ingredients. I mean, right now, you know, McDonald's has made a claim to serve antibiotic-free and hormone-free meat. Well, they're going to have a really hard time meeting their billions of dollars of hamburgers with meat that is raised in that way. Because right now, that's not how it's being raised here. So we really need to make voices heard, and that's starting to happen, but we can't let up. We have to keep up that pressure. So, you know, let your congressman know that you want, you don't want that bill to be passed, and that you want every state to mandate that genetically modified ingredients are labeled, and we want transparency in our food. We also want to save our bees. This is a really big problem. I've been talking about it a lot over the last couple months. I'm going to talk about it again right now because where Home Depot and Lowe's are really, you know, making a change and stopping selling the neonicotinoids, which are the pesticides that are killing the bees. There's still hardware stores out there that are not making that change. Right now I have a petition on my website to tell Ace Hardware and True Value to stop selling the neonicotinoids. So please sign the petitions. Go to my website at iegreen.com and see what actions you can take to really make a change. I'd like to share some things going on in and around the city that are, I think, exciting and that you may enjoy going to. There's something actually called the Laid Back Festival. This is a little beyond my normal advertisements, but not only is Greg Allman playing, who's a great musician from the Allman Brothers, but they're going to have local food and drink there at the Nikon Theater at Jones Beach. And this is going to be on August 29th. So it should be fun, and it should be a great event. So if you're interested in going to see that, that's August 29th. Slow Food New York City is having their fourth annual fundraiser. It's called The Slowdown, and that's at the White Hotel in Brooklyn. And you can go to the Slow Food NYC's website to buy tickets for that. Sunday, September 13th, Suffolk County is having a marathon, and it starts at 8 a.m., and you can go to the Suffolk County Marathon website to register if you want to be a part of the marathon. But afterwards, at the end of the marathon, everyone's going to congregate at Hexter State Park in Huntington, and there will be lots of food, music, drinks, and they will be highlighting a taste of Long Island. So this will be small purveyors from Long Island, local people who are making food right here. I've been asked to come and do a demo there as well. I actually was hired last year to go into Suffolk County beaches and teach some of the chefs how to make their own from scratch organic veggie burgers, kale salad, sweet potato fries. Suffolk County was realizing that at their public beaches, the food options were not healthy, and they wanted to really give some healthy options. Of course, they didn't want to take away the bad options, which I can understand for those that really want that, but at least there would be some healthier choices, and we did that, and the response has been great. And so they want to highlight those healthy options at the Suffolk County Marathon at Hexter State Park, and that is on September 13th. There is... On September 19th, Annie Appleseed Project, which is a great nonprofit, they are going to be having complementary and alternative cancer therapy events. The Natural Nurses organizing this, and Ellen Kamai, who is the Natural Nurse, is an amazing, amazing person, amazing wealth of knowledge, and should be really great. It's an all-day event from 9 to 5, so check that out. September 26th, the North Shore Land Alliance is sponsoring A Walk in the Woods. And this is happening out at the Sayville Grasslands in West Sayville. And participants will gain an understanding and appreciation of local land conservation and its benefits to our food and water supplies. And also take a look at wildlife habitats and their connection to our communities. So that should be a really great event. Also on that day, September 26th, Star Power Experiences is sponsoring their annual Long Island Naturally. It's an environmental fair out at Manor Farm in Huntington. It's an all-day event. And one of the highlights of that event is a community garage sale kind of thing. You know, everyone can, for $20, people come and bring all of their stuff, antiques and their garages and anything that they have they want to sell. So it's a really, you can find some really great treasures out there. So that's an all-day event. Also save the day for September 27th. Slow Food North Shore, which is the slow food organization I'm involved with, we are going to be partnering with NOFA New York on the potluck across New York. We're still deciding the final details. So just save the date, September 27th, to come to that. Also on September 27th, the Naval Expo is happening in Manhattan. That's at the Millennium Hotel. It's an all-day event, and there's also a Naval Expo happening in Long Island later on in the fall, November 8th. So those are really big events, lots of New Age purveyors, great food, organic food, lots of great resources for well-being and fitness and beauty and all that wonderful stuff. So save those dates for that. I want to share with you a recipe. My recipe this week, because we, of course, this time of year, we have so much zucchini coming out of the garden, I wanted to do something with that, and I wanted to do something really quick. I didn't want to be cooking in the kitchen, so I made a raw zucchini noodle salad with peanut sauce. And to do this, you need either a little veggie swirler, it's one of these veggie matty, they're called like spaghetti, the veggie. Vegetti, that's called Vegetti. Or you can even buy a more elaborate one. But basically, it takes the zucchini and it twirls it and makes long threads that look like spaghetti out of it. And that's what I did. And I only used one zucchini, and it's amazing when you're cutting it that way how expansive it becomes. So I did one zucchini that I spun into strands. And if you don't have that, you can shred it, but it's really, you lose something if you don't have one of those spinners. One carrot that I also spun. You could also grate that. One green pepper that I cut into very thin strands and then in half. 1/3 cup of scallions that I chopped. 1/4 cup of chopped parsley. 2 tablespoons chopped cilantro and 1/2 cup of peanuts. If you want this recipe to be raw, you can use raw peanuts. If you are okay with them being roasted, when you roast peanuts, it brings out the flavor. So that's why most peanut butter is made with roasted peanuts. But you can get raw peanut butter, too, if you need to do that. So I use roasted, unsalted peanuts for this recipe. The dressing, I use 1 cup of peanut butter. And, again, if you need raw peanut butter, you can find that. 1/2 teaspoon of chopped garlic, 1/4 cup of water, 1 tablespoon tamari, 1 tablespoon mirin, 1 tablespoon dark sesame oil, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1 teaspoon hot sesame oil, and 1 tablespoon of white wine vinegar. So first I cut up spun all of the ingredients for the salad, and I put that into a bowl. And then for the dressing, starting with the peanut butter, I put all that together in a little mini Cuisinart, and I pulsed that a bunch of times until it was a smooth sauce. Poured it over the ingredients and tossed. And that was it. Super easy, super quick, beautiful, and it was loved by everybody. So it was a real great, great dish. So if you don't have zucchini, you can use other vegetables in this as well. Try it with some summer squash. I wouldn't recommend it with eggplant, but you can just use that sauce and put it on really any kind of salad, and it would be really great. Okay, so now it's my pleasure to invite my guest on, Elizabeth Henderson. And Elizabeth has worked at the Piecework Farm in Wayne County, New York, for over 30 years. She's been a longtime member and on the board of directors of the Northeast Organic Farming Association of New York. That's NOFA New York. You've heard me talk about that organization a lot. And she co-chairs the policy committee and represents NOFA Interstate Council on the board of the Agricultural Justice Project. For 20 years, from 1993 to 2013, she chaired the Agricultural Development Board in Wayne County and took an active role in creating the Farming and Farmland Protection Plan for the county. She's been recognized so often for her work. In 2001, the organic industry honored her with one of the first Spirit of Organic Awards. Then in 2007, Abundance Co-op honored her with the Cooperating for Communities Award. And in 2009, NOFA New York honored her with a Lifetime Achievement Award and a Golden Carrot Award in 2013. And then in 2014, EcoFarm presented her with the Advocate of Social Justice Award, the Justie, they call it. I've met Elizabeth numerous times up in Albany at different protests. She is a face in so many of the wonderful events that I go to. She's also a writer, and many of her writings have appeared in The Natural Farmer, and she was also the lead author in the book Sharing the Harvest, A Citizen's Guide to Community-Supported Agriculture. So it's my pleasure to introduce you to Elizabeth. Elizabeth, are you with me?
I'm here, yes. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Listen to your recipes made my mouth water.
Well, I hope you try it out. But I want you to know, I put out on my newsletter, which goes out every Wednesday, that I was having you on. I got so many responses from so many of your friends telling me how wonderful you are and how happy they are that you're going to be on my show.
Shucks, that's really sweet.
Yeah, it was really nice. So share with me, I know you didn't start off your career as an organic farmer. So what inspired you to change careers and become an organic farmer?
Well, I got started in thinking about food really intensively when I had a baby. And I had read that food additives could be harmful to a child in different ways. And then I got a dictionary of additives, and there are so many additives. And they're not all listed. And after a while, I said, well, I guess the only way to be sure I'm feeding my son healthy food is if I grow it myself. So I was at a time in my life when I really was ready to do something totally different. So with some friends, we bought an old farm in Gill, Massachusetts. It was actually half of the farm, and all the buildings had either fallen down or burned down. So we had to do more than start over. We had to clear the wreck before we could start ourselves. And our idea was to homestead and grow food for ourselves. But then we grew more and started to sell it. And I discovered that that whole process of growing food and selling it was really enjoyable. And I decided that that was what I was going to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did you learn to farm? Did you apprentice first on another organic farm, or was it just a hit and miss type of thing? How did you learn?
Well, back when I was making this transition in 1979, 1980, I already had a son who'd been born in 1971. So it really wasn't possible to go do an internship. And there weren't very many farms at that time offering them anyway. And there weren't any schools in the United States where you could study how to be an organic farmer. I learned by having traveled in France and seeing some really amazing market gardens from reading and from hiring myself out for free to work for friends whose work as farmers I admired. Well, that's a really great way to learn. People will always be happy to have some free labor, and then mm-hmm. you can watch and learn from the people whose farm you're helping out. So I learned a lot that way from Paul Harlow, from Nancy and Richard, and some of the other people in the Connecticut River Valley, in the Pioneer Valley.
Mm-hmm.
I learned by doing.
Right.
And then
when
you start
New York
and you make mistakes, you really learn quickly.
Uh-huh. What were some of the biggest mistakes you made at the beginning? You had a little chuckle there.
That I'm hard to hear?
I said, what were some of the biggest mistakes you made at the beginning?
Oh, okay, big mistakes. Well, we got some tractors stuck deep in the mud. We got one tractor stuck, and then we got another tractor to pull out the first tractor, and that one got stuck too, and we had to get a neighbor with a big truck to pull both tractors out.
Uh-huh.
Things like that.
Uh-huh. And when did you start focusing on community-supported agriculture?
Well, at the farm in Massachusetts, we really experimented with all different kinds of marketing, selling to farmers markets, selling to restaurants, selling to the food co-op. All the different food co-ops around the Northeast have been really the best supporters of local organic farming since the 80s. They've been our best market. But I wasn't really able to make a living at it, and I had decided that I wanted to make my entire living farming and not work off the farm. So I heard about CSA from Robin Van En, who started the first CSA in the United States in 1986. She started one, and then there were people who started another one at almost the same time. She was a friend of mine, and I heard her talk about CSA. And she and her friends who worked on it, many of them were biodynamic, had designed CSA to solve the problem of the farmer having all of the risk and the farmer having all of the work and the customers just getting the food. So many farms went out of business in the 80s, and actually farms in this country are still going out of business. I read recently at the rate of about 20 a day because the prices people get don't cover the costs of production.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea behind a CSA is you design the farm and write out a budget, and you attract people who are like members of your farm club, and they agree to share the risk with you as a farmer. And it's the only kind of marketing that does that. So it's attracting people who understand how really fragile local, smaller-scale farms are and how important it is to support farmers who are willing to do organic farming and who will sign up and pay not so many dollars per pound, but really pay to keep the whole farm going from year to year. So with the CSA, for however many weeks it is, the members get what you have that week, and they agree to accept what's right. So with the farmer's market, you might go one week and it rains, so most of your food doesn't get sold. And then another week, you bring this beautiful spinach that you've produced, but that week everybody wants lettuce. And then the next mm-hmm. week you bring lettuce, but they really want spinach that week. With the CSA, when you have lettuce, that's what the members get. And you help them with recipes and ideas about using the food so that it doesn't become compost in their refrigerator.
Right, right. That's why when I try to share recipes, I try to think about what am I harvesting right now that I have a lot of that I have to figure out what to do. Like next week, I know I'm going to do something with eggplant because I have so many eggplants that I'm harvesting right now. So, that's the way that, people used to always eat. It was seasonal. You ate what was in season and you looked forward to that season. But people get so used to having what they want when they want it year round that it's hard to bring people back to eating seasonally.
Now, back in the early 90s when we were starting the CSA after a few years, I wrote a cookbook introducing the vegetables as they appeared through the season and helping people understand what to do with them. You said that you're active with slow food.
Mm-hmm.
That's really, really wonderful because slow food encourages people who eat food to think about becoming co-producers with your farmers. When you're a co-producer, you try to understand the farmer's situation, like what's in season or what the price is that the farmer needs to be able to produce that, and to take the time to really grow the food as a craftsperson to make it food that's maximally healthy from nutritionally dense rather than food that's produced quickly and on a kind of a industrial production line.
Mm-hmm. Right, absolutely. I remember when I first found slow food, because that was my philosophy way before I even discovered slow food. When I first found slow food, it was like, oh my God, there's an organization that believes what I believe, that understands what I understand, and that is about good, clean, and fair food and seasonal eating and, things grown organically without preservatives and pesticides. I mean, it was just, for me anyway, it was a match made in heaven. I'm sure the same way for you when you discovered, the availability of selling to CSAs or creating CSAs. When things just align, it's a perfect thing.
And NOFA New York has done a lot to support farmers in starting CSAs. Since 1990, we've had fairly regular conferences and farm tours where farmers who are doing CSA share what they've learned. Because every CSA is different. That's one of the wonderful things about it. It's based on the skills and the situation of the people at each farm. So mm-hmm. NOFA has helped bring people together to share their best practices and learn from one another. And that's
right.
What I tried to do in the book that I wrote about CSA, Sharing the Harvest, A Citizen's Guide to Community-Supported Agriculture. Robin Mannin actually started the book. And then really unfortunately, tragically, passed away from asthma. She didn't have epinephrine. She didn't have the money to pay for an ambulance, so she asked a friend to drive her to the hospital. And the lock on her car door was frozen, so by the time they fussed around and trying to get her into the car, she was gone.
Wow.
And so I took what notes she had, which really weren't very many, and spent the winter of 1997-98 interviewing as many CSA farmers and CSA members all around the country as I could, and that was the basis for writing the book. I was trying to set out a smorgasbord of all the possible ways you could do the different aspects of a CSA so that mm-hmm. people can choose what works best for them.
So is the book geared more for farmers to evaluate and to explore different CSA models, or is it more for the consumer and the public?
I tried to make it for both. Enough of a how-to so that either a farmer or a group of how to start a CSA, mm-hmm. combined with some of the social history of why CSA happens and why it's important. As you mentioned, that slow food wants food to be local, clean, and fair. The fair part has really been the most neglected, because
mm-hmm.
fair should mean that the farmer is getting enough money to be able to, live decently himself, to at least get a living wage.
Right.
And to pay a living wage to the people who work on the farm. And there really aren't very many farms that are doing that or that are able to do that. And that's why on behalf of NOFA, I got involved with creating the Agricultural Justice Project. We started back at the time when the National Organic Program, USDA, released their first set of regulations for the National Organic Program. And it didn't say anything about fair pricing for farms or respectful treatment and decent pay and benefits for the people who work on farms. And that was really, that internationally, that is an important part of organic. The International Federation of Organic Agriculture Movements, which unites something like 800 organizations all around the world in over 100 countries, organizations like NOFA, has four basic principles: health, ecology, care, and fairness. And the ecology and health and to some degree care are pretty well covered in the National Organic Program. It's one of the few USDA programs that actually does take care to follow the precautionary principle and not adopt technologies like genetic modification before we know whether they're safe or not.
Mm-hmm.
But the National Organic Program does not say anything about fairness to farmers and people who produce the food. So a few of us from farming organizations and the farm worker organization, CATA, the Comité de Apoyo a los Trabajadores Agrícolas, started meeting in 1999 to talk about how we could keep fairness in organic and sustainable agriculture in this country. And after a while, we developed food justice certification. And so far, it's mainly been an add-on for farms that are certified organic. But we're hoping to also do some pilots with integrated pest management farms that maybe are using a minimal amount of chemicals to see if those farms are being careful enough for, you know, the working conditions for the people who are there so they're not poisoned by the materials that they're using to kill the insects or kill the weeds.
Mm-hmm.
So food justice certification is really just getting started in the marketplace. Green Star Natural Foods in Ithaca, New York is certified, and the Piggery, which is a butcher shop in Ithaca. And there are a bunch of other farms in New York and in the Northeast who are somewhere in the process. The food co-op that I go to here in the Rochester area, Abundance, has filled out the application for food justice certification. So over the next couple of years, there will be more organic and food justice certified product in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see that label, you'll be able to know that it's from a food business or a farm that is trading fairly and treating their workers with respect.
That's great. So it's not only for farms, it's also for food-related businesses.
Yeah, the standards would cover any kind of food business. So it could be a restaurant, a processor, a manufacturer, a store.
Mm-hmm. And have you looked into partnering with organizations like Slow Food to try to get that out there?
Well, that's a really good idea.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that some more offline sometime very soon.
Okay, because that just seems like a natural partnership. Because
yes.
Slow Food addresses that a lot. And, you know, it's really an issue. And I have to tell you, just from having my own, you know, I kind of try to do the homestead thing here. I'm not a farmer where I'm not selling the food, but I do grow my own food, and I use it for my own cooking classes and events that I sponsor. I try to grow the food for, at least in season. We're limited here, as I know you are, in the Northeast. But, you know, growing my own food, I have such a appreciation for how much work it is. I mean, you know, to grow food as an artisan, to grow food with the time commitment and the love that it takes to nurture the plants and to harvest it and pick it at the right time and wash it and prepare it so it can stay in the refrigerator for the right amount of time. I mean, it takes so much time. It's hard for me to get anything
when you buy from
in the
a
summer.
Larger farm, or when you buy organically grown food in a grocery store,
yeah.
It's not just the farmer who has done that work. There are hired farm workers who are doing that work as well. And when NOFA did a survey of the farmers in our network, those farmers really wanted to treat their workers with respect. But the highest wage we found was $20 an hour. And many farms are paying like $9, $10, $12 an hour That's really not a fair wage for people who are doing work that's so important.
Mm-hmm. It's true. It's true. Babysitters get paid more than that. You know?
Isn't that shocking?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's what the Food Justice Certification is about. It's helping bring that awareness to people so that it's just a few pennies more a pound is enough to raise the wages of the people who are doing that work of producing that beautiful food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, no,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, let's take a short break. When we come back, let's talk more about that and talk more about, you know, the efforts NOFA is doing to help, you know, help the environment and climate change and all the other good stuff. So everyone listening, don't go anywhere. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and my guest is Elizabeth Henderson, and we will be right back.
Keep listening to PRN. The Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Carolyn Baker. Join me Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time for the Lifeboat Hour. Formerly hosted by the late Michael Rupert, the Lifeboat Hour, now hosted by me, focuses on creating internal and external resilience to fortify us in turbulent times. Our guests, music, and call-ins make for a show that you will want to keep on your calendar and share with your friends. For the finest in resilience radio, join us at the Lifeboat Hour on Sunday nights at 9 Eastern.
Join the movement at PRN.FM, your best source for progressive programming.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm with my guest, Elizabeth Henderson, author of Sharing the Harvest, A Citizen's Guide to Community-Supported Agriculture, and a NOFA board member and a real advocate for organic farming. Elizabeth, are you with me?
I'm there, yes.
Great.
Thank you.
So I want to just touch on NOFA's efforts to spread organic farming and to reduce the effects of climate change and to address food justice. I know that's a lot all in one time, but can you share with us some of the work of NOFA?
Well, NOFA's been in existence since about 1971. First it was a regional organization, and then we established state chapters in seven of the Northeast states. And then up in Maine, they have MOFCA, the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners, off on their own, but we're sister organizations, and we often work together. So there's a chapter in each of the Northeast states, and in New York, it's NOFA New York. The main work that NOFA does is helping farmers, gardeners, homesteaders learn how to produce food and other crops really well using organic methods and sharing that with other people so that there's a multiplier. Anytime anybody discovers a new idea, something that works, a way to take care of a new pest, we share it at conferences and field days and workshops all year round. If you go to the NOFANewYork.org website, you can see the list of field days that we're having all through the season and all through the year. We just had the summer conference, which was in Amherst, Massachusetts, and that's for all of the states together. And then NOFA New York has a winter conference in Saratoga Springs the third weekend in January. It's about the 23rd of January. And this year, our theme is good, hard work, ecosystems, economics, energy, and equity. So the thing about organic is it's a really holistic worldview. So it helps us understand how everything is interconnected. So one of the most important things that we can all be doing starting right this minute is to work to limit the effects of climate change by taking carbon out of the air and putting it in the soil where it does us some good. That's what organic farming methods are all about. Instead of purchasing synthetic nitrogen fertilizer, which does grow very nice crops, but it actually reduces the amount of carbon in the soil. So instead of using that, if you use turn under cover crops, make compost, put that in the soil, and try to disturb the soil as little as possible, the plants, in doing photosynthesis, are pumping carbon into the soil. And that takes it out of the air. And the more carbon in the soil, it builds up the organic matter. And it's that very complex set of relationships of all the microorganisms and bigger creatures in the soil interrelating with the plants that nourish the plants. They know how to do it. And our job as gardeners and farmers is just to facilitate that, to observe carefully, to make sure the plants are healthy. And then they know how to grow and flourish and produce food for us. And by adding more organic matter to the soil, we make it work better. And we're also helping reduce the carbon that's in the air that we've put there through burning too many fossil fuels. But organic farms use 30% less energy than conventional farms. And everybody can have, you know, the little box outside your window or your yard or your garden. You can use organic methods, or you can start buying organic food from area farmers, and all of that will contribute to mitigating against climate change.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And what do you think about the method? I know lots of organic farmers who use rolls of plastic to put over their fields to reduce the weeds and have the plants just grow through it. And then, you know, there's all that plastic. And you know, someone I had on the show, you know, shared with me that organic farmers use more plastic on their fields than anything else. So I was just wondering, what do you recommend someone use instead of plastic?
Well, like I say, I have two different things to say about that. As a farmer, I don't use very much plastic. But there is now a statewide project that all farmers, organic and conventional, can participate in to collect and recycle that plastic.
Oh, really?
So the Cooperative Extension is helping to coordinate that. So all of that ag plastic can be recycled and reused.
Oh, that's great to hear that. Okay, so who would be the person to get in touch with for that? Cornell Cooperative Extension?
I think so, yes.
Uh-huh.
They would know where your area collection point would be for ag plastic.
Uh-huh. That's great. So what do you see as some of the biggest obstacles that farmers are facing today? One in getting land, obviously that's one of them, but also in generating enough revenue so that they can pay fair labor wages. What do you see? Do you have any ideas for a solution to this?
Well, focusing on it, for starters, would help people understanding that even though there is a small premium on organic food, that because organic farming requires more labor. That's why those farmers are using the plastic to get away from using having more people to come to have to weed and hoe and take care of the crops like that by hand. We have a cheap food policy in this country, so there's constant downward pressure to keep the cost of food low. And that's what's putting farms out of business. So people who are making a better living, what I appeal to you to do is reprioritize how you spend your money. Spend more of it on food. Be willing to pay a bit more so that the farmers themselves can have a living wage and have a living wage for the people who are working on their farms. Because that is the only way we're going to have a sustainable agriculture. Mm-hmm. Farm work has to become a respected vocation, an occupation that has proper benefits, that pays time and a half for overtime, that provides health insurance. Everybody on an organic farm these days has to be someone who's really well trained so that we can all work together, farmer and farm workers, to figure out how to deal with an incredibly confusing weather that we're getting as climate change is happening. Each season is different from the one before. You can't get into a routine and just do it. You have to be incredibly flexible and have this huge bag of tricks to deal with torrential rains every other day. That's what we've been having up here in Wayne County. It's like the weather I experienced in Mexico when I visited as a teenager. We've never had that before. So It means you have to change all of the patterns of your farming. So everybody on the farm, I mean, that's why food justice is so important, is everybody on the farm has to contribute to figuring out what to do. They can't just be doing the work by rote. It's much more complicated than that.
How large is your farm that you farm now?
Well, our farm, the whole farm is 109 acres. The three of us who are partners in the farm, Amy Chickering, Greg Palmer, and myself, do not own the land that we farm on. We have an LLC, and initially we rented land from a family named Cry, and then Doug Cry suddenly passed away from a brain tumor. He was this big, wonderful, noisy, highly environmentally active guy, and then he was gone. So instead of buying the land ourselves, some of the members of our CSA core group were also on the board of the Genesee Land Trust, and we all worked out a deal where the members of our farm would contribute money to the land trust so that the land trust could buy the land and then lease it back to us. And that is what we've done. We have a 25-year rolling lease, so it rolls over every year. We have long-term tenure on this land, but we meet annually with the land trust, so we keep in close touch. Many land trust members are also members of the farm. And we have vegetables on about 15 acres. We're subletting some of the land to these wonderful brothers who are growing mushrooms and doing a permaculture project. And this year, I stopped being one of the managers about 3 years ago. Greg and Amy are working on passing on the farm to some much younger people. But having the land owned by the land trust means that it's not as expensive for the younger farmers to take over the farm business.
It's so wonderful. Thank God for these land trusts that are working really tirelessly in so many areas. We have the North Shore Land Alliance here. We have the Connaught Land Trust on Long Island, the Nassau County Land Trust. I mean, these organizations are working so hard to creatively find ways that, young people can get land to farm without coming up with the amount of money it would cost if they had to buy the acreage.
That's right. The cost of land beyond what you possibly earn as a young farmer.
Right. Right. Unless you come from family money, you are not going to have the money to buy the land. So it's great when that's happening. Can you share with me, does NOFA have any programs, or how do they work with some of the larger farmers who are not doing organic to try to bring them on board and encourage them to transition towards organic? Are they working on that at all?
Well, we have regular workshops on how you go about doing organic certification and what's involved in converting your farm so that you can be certified. We welcome all farmers, not just organic, to our workshops and conferences. And then many of us organic farmers are in organizations with other farmers. This year, I've been on the program committee for the New York State Agriculture Society. So I'm helping design a program about agriculture in New York and climate change. So we'll have a really wonderful speaker, a woman named Laura Langnick, who's just written a book called Resilient Agriculture, where she interviewed me and 25 other farmers who farmed for 25 years or more all around the country about what we've observed in the changing climate, and then what we've done to deal with the more difficult and changing conditions that we're facing. So she's one of the speakers. So doing things like that, which is really outreach to the whole farming community in the state of New York.
Right, right. Yeah, I know on Long Island, I have been a part of the Suffolk County Food Policy Council, and the Long Island Farming Association, and there's animosity, I think, between some of the old-time farmers that are, for them, sustainability was, not going out of business, and they would do whatever they had to not go out of business, which I appreciate, but really kind of angry towards organic farmers promoting
their product. Well, I think you need to understand that those farmers, what I've discovered is when they hear sustainable, they understand it as subsistence, and they've been there. They've done subsistence in their youth and their families, where you're just barely eking out a living or not at all. There's just this major misunderstanding about what sustainability means.
Mm-hmm.
And, farmers who are doing things differently, it's frightening to them. So it's understandable that there could be some resentment.
Right.
But
right.
In my work with the Farmland Protection Board, I tried to soft pedal the organic and just work on the things that we have in common, which is getting more people in the state to understand about farming and the importance of having local farms and eating locally grown food. And I think partly as a result, some of the generational farms in Wayne County are now converting to organic.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole system, so it's not easy to make that conversion. You have to do really everything differently and have different markets. So it takes people a while to wrap their heads around all the things that are involved. And it's important
right.
for us as farmers and you as consumers to be understanding and encourage them rather than be critical, like, oh, you horrible people, you're using these terrible chemicals.
Right. They were led down that path by our government. That wasn't their intention to pollute the land and you know, that wasn't their intention. Their intention was to grow food. And, yeah, it's unfortunate that it went that way.
And then there's this huge university industrial complex that's persuading them that these are the only materials that you can use. It's the only thing that works. You just have to use Roundup to kill all the weeds. That's the worst thing about the genetically modified foods, is that almost all of them have been treated with the herbicide Roundup, main ingredient glyphosate, which is now, you know, the World Health Organization says that it's a probable carcinogen.
Mm-hmm.
It's been known for decades that it's a carcinogen, and then it's been known, and there are many studies showing that it's an endocrine disruptor.
Right. Right. Yeah, I talked about that at the beginning, what corporations will do for profit, and with disregard for the health of our society, it's mind-boggling to me that people can be so unconscionable. But anyway, before we run out of time, Elizabeth, because we're coming to the end of our show, I wanted to ask you to share with my audience some of these upcoming events. I know you mentioned the NOFA New York Conference, Winter Conference. When is that?
It's January 22nd through 24th in Saratoga Springs, and all the information is on the NOFA New York website.
Okay.
And also, from NOFA New York and the other NOFAs, we have like a bunch of new materials on taking carbon out of the soil, restoring soil carbon, that are available from NOFA New York and from NOFA in Massachusetts, so that everybody can participate in saving our planet. We can all work together on this.
Uh-huh. Great. And there's another event you mentioned, World on Your Plate. What is that event?
I'm going to be speaking at, it's a conference, October 9th and 10th in Buffalo at Damon College. It's an annual event.
Uh-huh.
2 days of workshops and keynote speakers. And then in November, there's the Northeast Sustainable Agriculture Working Group, NESOG, conference, which is also in Saratoga Springs, November 12th, 13th, and 14th. So the NESOG conference.
That's the Northeast NESOG conference?
Right.
Uh-huh.
That's not focused so much on organic. It's focused on building a regional food system.
Right.
So creating
right.
food hubs, connecting with other people around different products, understanding how people in this region can take control of our food system away from the big corporations that will siphon all the funds off to Texas or wherever their headquarters are.
Yeah, I'll be sharing more information about that conference also on my website as the date gets closer. That's a really important
Great.
One as well. Well, Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining me. You are a wealth of information, and it's really been wonderful to have you on.
Well, thanks so much for having me, and I love your Eat Green motto, and everybody hopefully is listening to you and enjoying the programs that you give.
Thank you. Thanks so much. And everybody out there, thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'll see you again next week. Have a great rest of the week. Bye for now.